I'd like to call to order the regular session of the Berlin Mayor and Council for Monday, August 26, 2019. And it has been our tradition for many, many years. I would like to invite all in attendance to join the Mayor and Council in reciting the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
So please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our first item on the night's agenda is the approval of the executive session minutes of August 12th.
Motion to approve.
All right, go ahead.
I have a correction.
Okay. Got it.
Second page. Line 12, third word in should be Mr.
Which one is?
What should be what?
Oh, Mr. Gaskell. Okay, thank you. Okay.
I say leave it.
All right. Is that the only correction?
That's the only one I found.
Okay, nobody has any objection to that. Okay. All right. So would you like to make a motion to
Tom made a motion? Okay. With his correction.
Okay. We have a motion to approve the executive session minutes with the correction as pointed out by Councilman Burrell. All in favor of approving the executive session minutes, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All right. Please note the motion passed unanimously. The reason for the closed session August 12th, for two reasons under the Maryland Open Meetings Act. One was to consult with counsel to obtain legal advice on a legal matter. The second, to consult with staff, consultants, or other individuals about pending or potential litigation. Which now brings us to 1C, which is the approval of the regular session minutes of August 12th.
Motion to approve.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the regular session minutes by Councilman Koulias. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Again, the motion passed unanimously. All righty. It's my pleasure tonight to recognize one of our long-serving and professional law enforcement police officers here in the town of Berlin. And thank you. I'd like for Lieutenant Jeffrey Lawson to come forward, please. This is the kind of thing that for a lot of incidents that don't get actually reported on the books because it's not a crime, it's just a matter of public assistance and help. And but we thought this was a special nature because none of us have a greater opportunity to serve the public than our police. Lieutenant Lawson has been long,
I think you can safely call it 23.
And so on behalf of the, this is a commendation from the Mayor and Council of Berlin to Lieutenant J.D. Lawson. The Mayor and Council commend Lieutenant Lawson on his decisive prompt and quick action on August 8, 2019. They provided life-saving action on the three-month-old infant called into the Berlin Police Department. So on behalf of the Mayor and Council and the citizens of Berlin, thank you. We appreciate you. The chief has a few words to add. Thank you.
Speech. We're definitely blessed to go ahead and have officers, again, supervisors, such as J.D. Again, I had opportunity to speak to the actual mother prior to this happening today, and the first thing she said is she didn't know who the officer was. She didn't have an idea, and that's why she didn't call the police department to say thank you or anything. So a lot of times we are faceless and thankless. Mm-hmm. And again, this is a true honor to go ahead and have opportunity to go ahead and acknowledge his actions and to go ahead and say this is not just on that one day on the 8th. This was in July, last month, when he went ahead and had someone overdosing and gave 3 doses of Narcan, and the other officer was giving mouth-to-mouth. So, again, these are things that officers do every day, and we'd say thank you for having this opportunity for us to be here and share it with everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you. It is also my privilege to be able to want to acknowledge the 2019 Berlin Little League Championships. Berlin's Little League has a proud history that began in the 1950s, with literally thousands of youngsters in this area have benefited from this local and ultimately world-class program. Many local citizens are aware that Berlin's boys' junior league team returned to Berlin last week after securing victories in the Little League World Series. That resulted in them becoming the 4th-ranked team among all junior league squads in the United States and the 8th top-ranked team internationally. Many folks may not be aware that four divisions of this year's Berlin Little League All-Stars teams won Maryland State Championships in their respective divisions. Three were boys' baseball teams and also the girls' softball team. The most in all those over 50 years that we've ever had more than one team win a state championship was about 8 years ago when we had 2 teams win. Now we had 4. This is just unprecedented. I don't think this kind of achievement and continuing level of success has ever been experienced by a town of our size, and at least in recorded history of the Little League. So this is an unprecedented accomplishment in the over 50-year history of Berlin Little League. And on behalf of the Mayor and Council and the citizens of Berlin, I wish every player on these Berlin Little League teams to know that you have brought pride and honor to yourselves, your families, and your community. Later in the year, the Berlin Little League will honor all of these championship teams, and the town of Berlin will participate and help support this celebration with great pride and respect. So thank you very much. And again, how fortunate we are. Now we're up to agenda item 2A, and this is a motion to approve submerged gravel wetland project. And who's taking the lead on this?
I will, but I thought maybe Frank could come up and
please
speak to the agreement for a minute.
Okay, please do.
Thank you, Mayor, members of council. Laura, I'm Frank Piorca, Director of Maryland Coastal Bays Program. We're very pleased to be able to work with the town of Berlin on this important best management practice. We were aware that there was a funding issue with being able to fully implement this particular project. And at the time when we were talking with Laura, we were also talking with Department of Natural Resources, which was funding a project in Ilia Fair, wetland restoration project. Due to some cost savings there, there was an ability for us to reach out to DNR since our projects were in the same watershed and ask them whether or not they would consider the funding that we were saving on that project to be able to be applied in the same watershed for the same pollutant removal benefits. So they considered it. I want the council to know that the back and forth was not a slam dunk. Your folks, your engineer, Darrell, and others from my staff worked to put together a package for DNR's consideration. The water quality is the part that is attractive to them. 164 pounds of nitrogen per year with this best management practice is kept out of Newport Bay. And to make that a visual for you real quick, because I know you have a long agenda, 50-pound bag of 10-10-10 fertilizer contains 5 pounds of nitrogen. So we're keeping, by my math, 32 bags of 50-pound bags of fertilizer, the equivalent, out of Newport Bay every year with this best management practice. So small practices add up in the health of our bays. We thank you for moving this important project forward, any opportunity to work with the town. So if there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. But if not, we look forward to this.
I have a question.
Sure.
Can we find a way to depict that once the project's done so that people understand what stuff like that is actually
Absolutely.
Impacting?
Yes.
I think that would be a good
part
thing.
Part of what we're working with the town on is outreach for this particular project, and visuals like that are very, very informative and helpful. We'll be happy to work with you on that.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, good. All right. So the summary of the agreement that the council is being asked to approve is that Maryland Coastal Bays is going to be providing $54,500 towards the contract, which is $105,000, and that the town of Berlin will be applying money that was budgeted for this year, but no additional funds in order to let this project move forward.
Right. If you look at the staff report, I lay it out. We had $115,000 budgeted, $75,000 for the grant, and $40,000 for the match. There's $5,500 worth of water infrastructure work associated with the project. So if you go to the staff report, page 2, you'll see a summary of the sources of revenue for the project and the total. The funding for Coastal Bays, actually this statement of work shows the specifics of where their funding will go. It'll go to aggregate stone, excavation equipment rental, trekking costs, and construction management and inspection.
So if I understand this chart correctly, that the town of Berlin will be spending the stormwater budgeted funds, which come from the stormwater fees, in the amount of $40,000, and we'll use $5,000 of our water utility fund contingency to come up with our total of $45,500, mm-hmm. and the Maryland Coastal Bays and DNR grant together is an additional $54,500 for a total project cost of $175,000.
Correct.
Does anybody have any questions?
I do. Natalie, could you tell us what the consequences would be if we did not do this, funding-wise?
Well, we'll potentially lose the grant that allocated $75,000 and obviously $54,500 that is committed from DNR, so the project would come to full stop, basically.
And then looking further down the line, a year or two from now, if we were to apply for funding again, would it count against us one way or another?
I see is a definite yes.
Okay.
Then, if no one has any other questions, I'll make the motion.
One question, if you don't mind.
I don't.
And then you can move forward. I received an inquiry from one of our residents. I think it's probably better to direct it to Dave Gaskell. Page 3 of 4 on the MOU. The termination clause, is that pretty standard, or is there any concern in that section?
Page 3 or 4?
Yes, 3 or 4 of the MOU. Termination A and B.
section 13.
Those are standard.
It's a standard. Okay. That was my only question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So with that question answered, now I'll make the motion that we move to approve.
We have a motion, Councilmember Loyes, to approve the awarding of the Graham Avenue submerged gravel wetland, funded as we have just enumerated here in the last several minutes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Again, the approval is unanimous, and thank you again, Frank.
Thank you, Coastal Bays.
Thank you.
Coastal Bays, our staff, DNR, Darrell. Good work. Very good work.
Yeah, I think it's not surprising to us, but something I think sometimes gets taken for granted that almost everything that needs to be done requires a lot more money than it did even just a few years ago, and our partnerships make it possible to keep moving forward, sometimes in smaller steps and sometimes in big steps, but at least without those partnerships, a lot of this would not be possible. All right, next we are now at the 2B, the motion 2019-25, a requisition.
Mayor, excuse me. We're also seeking approval of a contract award to Goody Hill to do the construction work associated with the submerged gravel wetland. That would be part B of the of the motion.
That's where the $105,000, so the actual work can be done.
It wasn't clear for me from the discussion if you wanted to talk about the contract more. If you had any questions, Darrell's here, or if you wanted to go ahead and move approval of that contract.
What's your wishes?
I have a question. Is the RFP, I assume there was an RFP with this.
You do a bid document for construction projects. It's a competitive bidding process, just perfect. A different tool.
I just know that we had discussed including those documents with the approval, so as long as that suffices, I'm happy.
Yeah, we had brought this to the mayor and council back in June. We included both. There were just two responses, right?
Right.
We included all of the documents in here.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
I'll make the motion that we proceed.
Okay.
Section B of motion 2019-24.
Okay. We have a motion by Councilmember Tindall to approve the contract award in the amount of $105,000 to Goody Hill Groundworks for the Graham Avenue submerged gravel wetland project. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, thank you.
Great.
Motion
thank
passes.
You.
Thank you.
Thanks, y'all.
Let's see. Boy, I think we've got all that squared away. And next on our agenda is item three, and it's my pleasure to introduce Jean Holloway. Who?
Yeah, Mayor, we still have item two. It's the motion for Chesapeake Environmental Services.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There was two parts. I think the agenda is a little confusing. It's 2AA and 2AB, and then
just make it 2, 3, 4, 5. The old fashioned way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is not going to go through any grammar test. Okay. So we do have a motion, consider a motion for paying Chesapeake Environmental Services, CES otherwise named, for the chemical spill cleanup. This invoice is in the amount of $30,453.50. Do we have any questions for this? This is the ongoing cleanup that we expect to be completed by the end of this week.
As far as the vendor goes, this should wrap up.
There's a little bit of additional work that he's doing on Thursday. We have an estimate for that. So we expect to see an invoice for that in the amount of about another $11,000 to $12,000. That should do it.
Yeah.
But this is not it. Yeah.
This will be the next to last invoice for the cleanup. As Laura explained, knowing that we'll receive a final invoice after the cleanup late this week for the next meeting.
That
will be approximately $11,500 something
right in there.
So if there are no other questions, I move to approve the
the invoice for the cleanup.
Okay. We have a services. We have a motion by Councilmember Burrell to approve the invoice from Chesapeake Environmental Services for the cleanup, continuing cleanup at Heron Park for the chemical spill in the amount of $30,453.50. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Next is Gene Holloway, which some folks will hopefully very much remember with very positive and happy memories. Gene was our town administrator a few years ago.
And, 25
years ago.
25 years ago.
Yeah. May I stand? Is that all right?
Sure, sure, yeah, no problem.
The microphone, pick me up if I stand. Or...
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, welcome back, first of all. Thank you so much. And you might explain to everybody.
I'm a trainer in the last 25 years, so I'm more comfortable so I can see and stand.
No problem. Moving targets are harder to hit.
there we go. Okay. As the mayor said, I'm the state manager for Delaware and Eastern Maryland for Southeast Rural Community Assistance Project. I've been through a few permutations since 1996, but I've basically been a trainer by profession since then. I've been teaching classes on rate-setting practices to professionals throughout Region 3, done a lot of training for a lot of other organizations, and I've done training for CERCAP, which is kind of how I got this job. So, also worked for Delaware and Maryland Rural Water. CERCAP, you probably haven't heard of it. That's one of our biggest battles. Most people haven't heard of it. We are a nonprofit regional technical assistance organization, and we do training and technical assistance, obviously. We have a 7-state region from Delaware down to Florida. We were founded originally as the Virginia Water Project back in 1969. We recently celebrated our 50th anniversary. We have five other regional organizations besides us formed the Rural Community Assistance Partnership, which is our national parent organization, if you will. We receive money from federal programs to provide this kind of service to small communities under 10,000 population. And we provide these services for free. This rate study is being done for free. Well, it's not for free, but it's at no cost to the town. we also have housing and private well and septic programs. They're run from our central office in Roanoke, Virginia. Our office locally is in Frankfort, Delaware, as close to the Maryland line as we could get. And we have projects all over Maryland and Delaware. Even though our territory is supposed to be Eastern Maryland, I'm picking up more on the Western Shore all the time. But to get into the basic, this is a kind of an overview of a class that usually takes like 4 hours, and I promise it won't be. this is kind of a condensation of what I present for mayors and councils. But the characteristics of your rate design, they have to be legal, obviously. But you also want them to be equitable and fair to all of the customers and all the customer classes. And that sometimes leads to a lack of understandability, if there is such a word. They get some small systems, they get so complicated, people don't understand what they're paying for, much less why they have to pay it. And from your perspective, they have to collect enough money to cover your costs, both the costs you have to write a check for and the costs that may not be readily apparent to you. They have to be efficient in recovering those costs as well as being practical to administer so that the staff isn't ripping their hair out every quarter when the bills come due, or every month, I guess. Basic principles, you have to recover the full cost of operation, both tangible and intangible. And when I say intangible, I mean covering the cost of reserves that you may not view as a cost of operation. In my view, it is as much a cost of operation as something you have to write a check for, because if you put in a pump today, every day that it's used, it wears out a little bit. And when you get way out here on the timeline and have to replace it, the people that have caused it to wear out have been those that have been hooked up to the system in between. It's the cost of operating the system that those people need to cover that eventuality. And obviously they have to be not only equitable, they have to be defensible. You have to be able, if somebody asks you in the grocery store, you know, why is this water rate like it is, then you have to be able to defend it, whether you're a staff person or a council person.
sewer revenue shouldn't be used to pay for unrelated services in the general fund, and vice versa. The general fund shouldn't be paying for the water utility, the sewer utility, or the water utility. And you can, you know, make the argument, a lot of times a public organization makes the argument that, well, our taxpayers and our customers are the same. There's an overlap, most certainly, but they really aren't. Unless every single property in town is owner-occupied, the taxpayers and your water customers are not going to be 100% the same. So in order for your taxpayers not to be subsidized on the water system need, and sewer system, I tend to think water, but I have a water license in Delaware, so I'm kind of water-oriented anyway, but the utilities should be paying their own costs and not being subsidized by the general fund. And that is a general principle with enterprise funds under the Maryland Code as well, but it's very, very seldom recognized. But anyway, and obviously you need to track your usage as much as possible, because the more detail you have on usage, the more you can predict what the revenues are from whatever rate scenario you choose. And the rate structure needs to be understandable as much as possible. And it helps to keep the public informed as to how the rates are calculated, because it's more understandable to them that way. Why, you know, I've had people say, why do I have to pay for water? It falls from the sky. I had a man tell me it was God's water. God's water is in the river and in the creek and in the rain barrel. The water that you provide costs to provide. Just a quick graphic that I use in a lot of my classes. If you have, I think there's a point on it, yeah. If you have unadjusted rate revenue, you start out here at year one and your rate revenue doesn't change. Now that, obviously it doesn't work that way because you have loss of connections, additional connections. But if you have unadjusted rate revenue, and as long as your expenses are at this level, you're in pretty good shape. You've got a little bit of reserve. But when you reach that break-even point, all of this out here is loss. And typically it happens in the second or third year as inflation makes those costs go up. So if your rates have not been adjusted and they've stayed the same for so long, so that your revenues have stayed basically the same for so long, your costs are going to go up based on inflation no matter what you do, if nothing else changes. So the idea is to the faster those expenses go up, the faster that's going to happen. Inflation's been relatively low, so the angle's probably not quite as sharp as that graphic would depict, but it's still going to go up no matter what. One of the things, the analogies that I use, is the cost of your operation is like a pie, and a rate study or change in rate structure can help you reslice that pie. I can help you reslice that pie. What I can't do is change the size of the pie. Your costs are your costs, and they're not going to get any smaller. And you can conserve all you want. You can ask people to conserve the water they use. The danger there is that your revenues go down accordingly. So there's a balance that has to be struck. So if you change that slice of the pie, yeah, you can change where the money comes from in terms of class of customers or the customer segment, the portion of your population, or anything in between. I can slice it up any way you want, but the pie is going to be the same size. I recommend three things that should be done before any rate increase for any community. And that is to get a handle on revenue, on non-revenue water, water that you're not getting paid for. It's costing you to produce, but you're not getting paid for. You take your total production, deduct the total bill, and you come up with what's unaccounted. You don't know who's used it, where it is. And then you can deduct things that you know you've lost. For example, you had a water leak, you had a major fire, you flushed hydrants or whatever. You can estimate what those losses are. And what that comes up to is non-revenue water. And your non-revenue water should be less than 15%, and most people will tell you less than 10. In AWWA, said, for example, says less than 10%. If I can get a small town below 15%, I feel like I've done something. Part of that unaccounted for non-revenue water is looking at meters that may be less than accurate. Any meters that are 10 years old or more are likely to be under-registered, particularly residential meters. You put them in and within the first are your cash registers. And that's something that's very, excuse me, very important to I can't overemphasize that. Because if they're under registering, you're providing water to people and you're not getting any money for it. And I'm told that you 70% of your meters are 15 to 20 years old. 30% are less than 15 years old. So one of my recommendations, not to preclude the rate study or replace the rate study, but that should really be looked at. Meters that only register in whole thousands can lose money as well, especially if you're using a gallon allowance in your minimum bill. You could be losing money there as well. And any lost water means lost revenue. I would suggest a systematic meter replacement or meter replacement program over a phase in a couple of years could pay for itself pretty quickly. The second thing to do before a rate increase is get a handle on collections. Now, if I understand correctly, yours are in pretty good shape. But whatever you bill out should be collected, 95% of it should be collected before the next bill is due. And I think you're there or a little higher, if I'm not mistaken. So that's in pretty good shape there. Policy should be consistent and evenly applied. And there should be I went to my council member, and my council member said, that can get the staff in trouble. Been there, done that. But policies and so forth should be high. The fees should be high enough to discourage repeat offenders. You're always going to have 2 or 3% of your customers are going to be on the cutoff list every month. It never fails. But there are some that will only be on there once because it was abused or because they don't want to have to pay that fee again.
Can I ask a question? So we don't actually charge a disconnect fee. We charge a reconnect fee.
Right.
Is that
right.
Something you think we should look at, charging a disconnect fee?
Normally, I don't see a disconnect fee. You do that for your benefit. The
yeah.
reconnect fee is for their benefit,
right.
And you should have to pay.
Got
them.
It. Okay.
But the fee, as I recall, was it was after hours, and it was a three-hour minimum.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I haven't looked at them lately, but the fees are probably in pretty good shape. But I put that in there because I have seen towns, one town in particular, charged $5 for a return check, and the bank was charging them $30.
Yeah.
It's an encouragement. So, you know, you kind of got to look at that. But non-payment costs everyone. You have to, when I do a rate study, I base the rates proposal on 95% payment so that your customers, that 95%, are paying a little bit more than they really have to make up for the people who don't pay, and it costs everybody. The third thing is to make sure that the gallons that are included in your minimum bill are at the optimum level. I prefer to see no gallon allowance. Yours is at the maximum I recommend, 3,000 gallons a month. I wouldn't recommend any more than that. And if I had my druthers, I'd druther it be zero. But we'll talk about that.
Yeah, what's the alternative? If you could provide just a brief...
Well, I'm going to get into my approach, but what I do is I structure a minimum bill, or I call it a customer charge. It's like the customer's membership in the system. It's what everybody pays, regardless of whether they go to Florida and have the water cut off or whatever. They pay that customer charge. And that covers your fixed costs.
Yes,
and then everybody starts paying at 0 gallons the same rate. And you can often bring that actual rate per thousand down by doing that very often. And you'll find that some lower-end users often, not always, and I'm not guaranteeing it's going to happen here, but when I do these rate studies, very often the lower-end users end up saving money.
Will that be something we can look forward to seeing in your report?
Yes, and also I can calculate it with 0 gallons, or I can calculate it with your remaining 3,000. But an axiom in rate setting is if you have a gallon allowance in your minimum bill and you need more revenue, an interim measure, you just reduce the gallon allowance and your revenue goes up. Mm-hmm. So you can, you know, that's something to think about. It impacts the cost recovery rate, and that can often bring the rates down a little bit. Maybe. I mean, I haven't looked at the numbers,
right.
So don't hold me to that, but that's usually the way it works. But that gallon allowance should be low enough to avoid giving away water. For people that, you know, but often people like, I call it Miss Maud, Miss Mauds of the world who live by themselves, mm-hmm. and use 1,000 a lot more, and they're getting 3,000 gallons, not for nothing, but, you know, at a lesser rate. So.
And it doesn't reward conservation.
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. So, again, I recommend no more than 3,000 gallons a month you're already there. But if you insist on having a gallon allowance, then I would calculate scenarios with and without the gallon allowance. I've done that for other towns as well. Again, I encourage starting at zero. Obviously, you know, typical rates, uniform or flat rate, everybody pays the same. That's really getting phased out. I don't see that too much anymore. The metered minimum plus volume charge, that's kind of where you are now, and that's the most common that I see, with or without gallons included in the minimum bill. Excuse me. And then there are those who use in the larger systems. I think this may be a valuable tool, but a town this size, it would be difficult to do, but it's not impossible. But a block volume rate, where you pay so much for the first 5,000 and then so much for the next 10,000 or whatever, and you can set that as a matter of policy. That's more difficult for me to do. It'll take me longer to do it, but I can do it. The rate structure that I usually start out with, unless I get direction from the administrative team to use something different, is I go with a customer charge per equivalent dwelling unit that everyone pays no matter what they use. And I use equivalent meter size to calculate equivalent dwelling unit, because the meter size is the one thing that doesn't change. If you use a gallonage, a gallons per month or whatever to define equivalent dwelling unit, you end up with somebody uses over that 1 month and under that another month, and it just makes a mess. The meter size doesn't change, so that's what I mean. I use the AWWA standard for meter size, meter equivalent. And then a per 1,000 gallon charge to cover your variable costs.
That sounds, using the meter sounds like it would be more accurate.
To me, it is, and it's the one thing that's uniform. It doesn't, you know, it isn't going to change. The fixed charge ensures that you can pay your bills no matter what. If there were a natural disaster, a hurricane come through there, and you couldn't sell any water, you would still have bills to pay. So you have to be able to pay those. And what I use is debt service and reserves as those fixed costs to calculate the minimum bill. I can put other things in there, but that's what I start with. And what I'm going through now is just how I approach this, but I can take direction from Laura, from you all as well.
Now, will this be in a format that can be altered later on without having to recontact?
Once I get the model set up, it is my model.
Right. It's proprietary.
Once I get the model set up, and even in a live council meeting, for example, say, what would you do if you had an order here? I've got my computer, I can add it in and show how it affects the revenues.
So that's something that if we implement changes in a fiscal year and we say, hey, something didn't work so well, or we want to adjust it here or there, that wouldn't be very labor-intensive for you to do once you have the data.
Right. The most labor-intensive is getting the thing set up to start with.
Perfect.
And then your variable charge, again, is ensures that the customer is only paying for their use. For example, if you balk at that idea of starting at 0 gallons, think about it this way. You're not paying for 1,000 gallons that your neighbor uses. You're only paying for what goes through your meter. So it's the most, in my view, and again, policy is up to you all. This is just my view of how it should be. It's the most equitable way to charge. There's nobody paying for anybody else.
And we currently do that with electric, right? Like we bill for usage.
Yeah.
So
it's not uncommon.
And you're billing for water usage now, but you're including 3,000 gallons.
Right.
Again, this is my approach, and I'm not commenting really on your water rates yet because I haven't seen all the numbers yet. But I use reserve levels. I put them into the model as cost of operation. I can use cost-based method, which is to identify all those costs. And as an aside, Jamie and his staff and I, which I keep missing him, but we're trying to work on a capital improvement plan that will identify some of the costs and the reserves that you will need over time. Because when I set my model up, I project costs out over 5 years. So once we figure those costs, then I can kind of guesstimate what your rates will need to be over 5 years. And what I do instead of the cost-based method. percentage method. I take a 2.5% of revenue for the repair, replacement, rehabilitate to accumulate over time so that you build up a little bit of fund, kind of like you start saving for that new car and you put so much in a year kind of thing. And then I set aside a percentage of expenditures for emergencies, and I usually use 12.5%, which is 6 weeks. The old-fashioned used to be was a quarter of revenues in the reserve for emergencies. I find that many small towns can't or won't afford that to set that aside and not use that money. So I put in 12.5%, so you can pay your bills for 6 weeks if something happens. And then a set-aside is required. If you have an outstanding USDA loan, you're required to set aside a percentage for debt service, 10% a year. And then I can use, you know, other percentages or other levels if that's what you direct, but that's just where I start. I just went through this slide, so I'm going to skip that. And I'm getting close to the end, so bear with me. Once I start all this, once I get the requested data, it takes an average of 40 hours to do the water rate study. I always start with water first because your sewer is based on the usage, so I start with that. Some take more than that. I'm working on one right now where I've spent at least half again that much and it isn't done yet. But some take a little bit less. It's an average of 40 hours. Once that's done, it takes me another 10 to 20 hours to do the wastewater stuff once I get the model set up. That's all other things being equal. The reality is that I never get 40 hours straight to work on it because I have a lot of, I'm carrying like 17 projects right now, including the work stuff. And I have some general responsibilities, and there's travel in there too. So, you know, I will do the best I can. I would look at maybe have 9 other studies of the ways in the pipeline besides yours. And 3 of them have deadlines in September. So it's going to be a while before I can even get started. If I got the data tomorrow, I probably wouldn't be able to start on it until at least October. When I get this first draft done, what I like to do is sit down with the management team, which can be whomever you designate. I would assume Laura and Jamie and maybe Natalie and, you know, the mayor or whatever, somebody that can, you know, give me direction. That I don't like this. Can you tweak that? Can you put in a dime here or whatever and get some direction there? And then I like to meet with mayor and council in work session if that's done. If it's not done, I can do it in a public session like this, however you all want to do it. But I like to get a little bit of direction before I present it in a public meeting. And this is all part of the service. I do a presentation just like this with all the scenarios. I typically give you 3 alternatives to choose from. I can do more, I can do less as director, however you want to see it. And then once I get all the revisions done, then present it like this in a regular meeting. So just in summary, the customer minimum plus volume rate is the most equitable in my view. Because people pay only for what they use, and nobody's getting free water, nobody's paying for water retention wells. That you have to recover. Overhead was something I didn't cover because you all are already allocating the cost of overhead. I typically try to allocate a percentage of mayor and council time, town administrator time, and so forth to water, but I think you all are already doing that. Mm-hmm. But reserves need to be included as a cost of operation, or you're losing money. I mean, it might just be on paper if you're using money. The gallon allowance, in my view, should either be eliminated or as low as possible. And that a meter replacement program for this 70% of the meters is something that definitely should be considered in the phase in it. And I remember they were under in the 3rd year of a meter replacement program 25 years ago, a meter installation, the original meter. So some of them are that old. So it's important that you know those cash registers be replaced as soon as possible. And we also have a person who's assigned to helping you find funding, so we can get her in here to help you. But I'm sure you've got pretty capable people. I know at least one of them is pretty good at that. So you know, it's something that we can help with as well.
You remember that far back?
Sure.
You remember that far back?
Yeah. Yeah. You are a lot of people. I hired Jane Crider. Yeah. So anyway,
How are you compensated?
We get money, and this particular activity will be under what we call Technitrain, which is funded by USDA. They're one of our biggest funders. We get money from EPA to work with water only. That's why this is, I'm putting this under Technitrain, because Technitrain, I can do water and sewer. If I work with a system in charge of EPA, it's water compliance anyway. And we have money from Health and Human Services. And in Delaware, we have some state grants. I haven't gotten any there. We have to work them up. So anything we can help you do, and it will most likely be the first of 2020 before I'll have anything to show you. I've just got too many irons in the fire right now. And above all, this is an all-purpose slide, so don't be offended. But manage the finances so that the full costs are offset by equitable economical user charges. And that can help you reslice the pie, but I can't change how big the pie is. And that's that. Questions?
I do have a quick question. Yes. When it comes to the meter replacement, will you also take into account the number of man hours that are spent on a monthly as well as a yearly basis reading those meters and comparing that to the possibility of making those meters being able to be read electronically?
In this day and age, if you're going to do a meter replacement program, I would recommend electronic reading.
Perfect. And do you have, just this is just a crystal ball question. I know you can't hold the price to this. Can you give me an idea of what an average water meter would cost for an electronic type read?
The biggest cost would be your infrastructure, i.e. the antennas. The meter is going to be, I'm going to say it's the cheaper end, but you have to put all the antennas up and you have to figure out the best practical locations for your antennas.
You've already got the meter pits, which is what's part of the valve, as long as they're still using them. So my guess, and that's all it is a guess, and Jamie may be even more knowledgeable than I would guess 500 to 750 per, maybe as much as 1,000 for some, but maybe less than that for others.
Yeah, like I said, you're close, because your biggest infrastructure, you got to get the infrastructure in. They'll send people in here for whoever you choose to pick the best locations for your antennas. So that way, if we're going to do a radio read, that way the whole town's picked up.
And for years we've discussed this back and forth. I know I've dealt with some folks here in town before that we can't use the same system to read an electric meter on Tim's side as we can a water meter on his side.
My understanding is that's as much Public Service Commission rules as it is technology.
Okay.
I might be wrong about that too, because I'm a little behind on the technology.
That's fine.
And in terms of the rate study, I will use the 2019 figures. Now, and I were talking about that before the meeting. So that would include the man hours, the person hours that it takes to read your meters. So I won't factor that into the eventual rates, but as you replace your meters, that may allow you to keep those increases down lower as you go along after the meters are replaced. Your revenue should go up because you'll be getting
How many days, Jamie, how many days a month are you taking to read meters, water meters?
It takes roughly three people, 2 days a week, or 2 days a month.
And then rereads?
Probably about the same.
But in this day and age, if you're going to put in a meter, and this is an opinion, this is not fact, but it would be a waste of money to put in anything
else. Oh, I agree.
A radio.
Will your data include revenue possibly lost from using these old meters and having inaccurate readings?
Not as such, because it's so impossible to calculate unless you go out and test every one of these meters and see how much they're under registering. Based on Jamie's professional judgment and my experience, I can guarantee you they're probably under-registering. But whether it's 5% or 20%, there's no way to tell without testing every one of them.
So that figure you gave in your presentation, a meter that's 5 years old, losing 2%,
roughly,
that is
your best guess.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you put it in, it's probably going to register maybe 98%, would you say?
Yeah, you're registered. The only day it's most accurate is the day you install it. Yeah. Once that first gallon of water goes through, I'm not going to say because I don't want it, but you're losing, you know, water usage right then and there.
And that's not to say you don't have a 20-year-old meter that's registering 98%. I don't know, you know. And to test them, you talk about some man hours.
Yeah.
Well, that would take some serious, you know, to test a sample maybe to get a handle on it. But to test, was it 30, how many is it, 3,000 and some?
There's 2,000.
2,055 meters.
Yeah. So that's some serious, and then that's the customers out of water while you're testing it, and that's a headache you probably don't want to get into. Does that answer your question? Any others?
I have one.
Sure.
Where can we get the 4-hour class? I'm intrigued. So can you pass that information along?
Yeah, they don't have one scheduled right now, and frankly, the last couple ones they've scheduled, I don't know if it's an instructor or what, but they've canceled them for lack of registration. So.
Well, if you pass the information along, I greatly appreciate it.
As soon as I have one scheduled, I will. Okay. I am doing a one-on-one in my office on Wednesday in Frankfurt. If you'd like to come sit in, we're perfectly welcome.
Very nice.
Do you have those often?
Beg pardon?
How often are they held?
There is no regular schedule. This is just a kind of a pop-up thing. Somebody said, I need help. I'm supposed to take a class. And I said, well, come on, we'll just do some one-on-one training. But I can do that.
What happens if you have some time? I realize your time's very limited, but if you had time, maybe we could offer something like that here and inform the community as well.
I would be very happy to do that. In fact, one of my deliverable requirements under some of my grants is to do training sessions, and I've only been able to do just the ones I had to do. I would love to do more.
Well, you normally have them in
Frankfurt? No, we don't have. We're in an old bank building. We have two rooms and a bathroom. Our storeroom is the bar for the bank, so that tells you something. But no, we use mayor and council chambers like this, and anything we can get for free, basically, because we don't have much of a budget to pay facility charges. But.
And we've had pretty good success with hosting a variety of things that are not just for the town, but before the region, and people don't seem to mind coming east. Mm-hmm.
And this is a pretty good location as well. I mean, I've done training since this room's been built when I worked for the Environmental Finance Center. I can't remember what the topic was, but I know I've done at least a couple of training sessions.
Well, if we could do that, that would be nice.
I spent a lot of hours downstairs, too.
A few.
I think this is a really complicated subject, and I agree with Councilman Tindall. I'd like to see something brought here for us as well as the community if we could.
And, I mean, I'm not opposed to doing it on a Saturday or an evening or whatever. You know, everybody has jobs, but, we can do what suits the crowd.
That'd be great.
Most people don't want to spend 4 hours in the evening if they don't have to.
And maybe we could find a way to make that available. I don't know how you feel about the information being available online, but maybe we could do. I know you have some technology to do Facebook Live, so
the more the merrier. We'd be great, and we have a national training calendar too, so I would publish it to our national training calendar.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, we've had success in getting people to come, but then there's been maybe 4 or 5 times that many people looking online, checking in online,
sure.
And you know we're trial and error, we're trying to find out the best combination.
The one thing that I would say about the 4-hour class, it does get into a little more detail in terms of formulas and things like that. And, you know, the average person might go,
And maybe we adapt it so that it's more community-based. I think that would probably be more informative. And if we have some more information that we would like, we could follow up.
I'd be happy to set up something.
That'd be great.
Yeah. It would be really awesome.
Thank you.
And then we'll work on... You know, I'll get to work on it as soon as I'm able.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good seeing you again.
Thank you.
All right.
I didn't use the chair book.
We'll start with our departmental reports first. The Finance Director, Natalie Salee.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't have any skill tonight.
Okay. Okay. Next is Administrative Services Director, Mary Boland.
I had put out in the
once I did launch, unfortunately, there were quite a few glitches in transition from the old site to the new. I've been on the phone and email with D3 quite a bit in the last few days. They're working on it. They feel that they will have it right and ready to go by the end of this week. I have my fingers crossed.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. I don't know how things, you can't always anticipate how technology is going to adapt to change.
Yeah, and quite a few staff members had spent quite a bit of time looking at the proposals and making tweaks to this, that, and the other. But when it actually came time to pull the data over, it just didn't go as planned.
Yeah, just the nature of the beast. Okay, thank you. Next is Water Resources Director Jamie Latcham.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. We repaired the sewer on Flower Street Thursday last week. It was the lateral broke to the house feeding, I forget the address, I think it's 520. So we prepared that last week and working on fire hydrants and getting them exercising and maintenance onto them. That's all I have.
Okay, anybody have any questions?
I do. What's with the fire hydrant on Pender's Court?
It is repaired.
Thank you, sir.
I spent some time on Flower Street last week. And the department, besides fixing the problems in the streets, some of the residents are really not appreciating things that the town is doing. In the day's time that I was out on the street, we had two residents, I'm almost sure they're Berlin, I know one was, didn't appreciate the road being closed. The lady didn't see the sign. And everybody's been through that street. They had big signs, the state signs, I think. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she complained she didn't see the signs, so she didn't listen to, I think it was Jamie. She just cut on the sidewalk and kept on through the roadblock. Yeah. And then one lady, I approached and told her the road was closed. She said, you were here this morning and you're here this afternoon. You don't care anything about the residents. You should be finished by now. That's the way she spoke. And I told Jamie, I said, it's going to get to the point where you're going to need a policeman out here. Because
it might come to that someday.
Some people just don't appreciate some of the things that the town is doing, trying to correct the problems that we have. Yeah. But that was my experience.
Now,
I'm glad Jamie and his crew did it in less than
a
day's time.
Now, my experience was different than Councilmember Britton had. I talked to people who thought the street was going to be closed longer, and they talked about how expeditiously your team worked. So,
well, I will say thank you for that, and I'll pass on. Goody Hill did a lot of the work because it was so deep. But, I mean, we still had a lot involved because we had to get the signs up and the notifications. But I will, you know, they were good to work with, and everybody was, you know, I appreciate it.
I would just encourage everyone not to judge everybody by the few contrarians, which have always been and always will be. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but some people, no matter what happens, are unhappy. And unfortunately, they like to spread their unhappiness. But, you know, we don't want to inconvenience anyone unduly, but certainly we want to make sure the work gets done. So, you know, just in life's experience, I found that most people are appreciative or at least accept what has to be done, and unfortunately there's always a few that you can't make happy no matter what. So, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next is Electric Utility Director Tim Lawrence.
Good Mayor. Good evening, Mayor and Council. I have a few things to report on. At 218 West Street, we replaced a rotten pole there. At 100 Ann Drive, we installed a new underground service to a house there. And then at as far as peak shaving for the summer runs, we ran on Monday the 19th from 2 to 6, and then Tuesday the 20th from 2 to 6. total summer runs, we've ran 16 times, and during the winter, back in January, we ran one time for a total of 17 times. As it looks right now, I don't foresee we'll have to peak shave anymore the rest of the summer unless something drastic happens. But we should be done with peak shaving for the summer runs. And then also we had two power outages. One of them occurred on Thursday, which was the 22nd. That was storm-related. Circuit 230 was totally knocked out. It was out for about an hour and 40 minutes, and that occurred at, I think that was like 1 o'clock in the morning, I believe, something like that. So by the time the crews got in here and once the circuit goes totally out, we have to ride the entire line at nighttime during the storm. And it's very hard to see what's going on with the overhead lines and the trees and things like that. But once they determined and they couldn't find anything, they closed the breaker back in. And that was about 1 hour and 40 minutes. And then on Friday, June 23rd, we had a blink on the transmission line from Delmarva Power, which blinked the entire town, but that was only for 1 second. Yeah. But I did get a couple of calls about
that.
Yep, so that's it. Yeah. Thank you.
Does anyone have any questions for Tim? Thank you. Next is Police Chief Arnold Dowling.
Good evening, everyone. We're still preparing for school, making contact with each one of the administrators. Everything has been going with that process so far. The police department is finished with the training for the body cameras, so you will actually be able to see those on the officers. Other than that, ready for the holiday and school starting.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you again. Please pass on our appreciation to all the officers. Thank you. Next is Planning Director Dave Engelhardt.
I have nothing further to add tonight.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Dave? And finally, we have Managing Director, Public Works Director, Jeff Lee.
Two items that affect this building here. Thursday of last week, we tried to operate the chairlift, and the chairlift was not functional. Mm-hmm. Long story short, what's been determined, there's an issue with the wiring that runs from this back corner over to the chairlift. So that has been rewired, and it is now functional. Contacting the electrician for that. Also last week when I came in one day out back where the soda machine is located, that double door room there, what that houses is the control room for the geothermal system for this building. There was a water leak last week. I was able to tighten something up and it stopped. Well, I came in today, there's quite a bit of water. I have a contractor coming tomorrow who's beyond my capability. But we do have a leak, and that it's an aging system. We talked about that sometime soon. I say soon, early fall, early to mid fall. What's slated to be done? The two air handlers that are in this room here, the one in the middle of the room that controls this room, and the one on the left side controls the entire downstairs. Those are the two old issues that we have. Going to remove those and go to a more traditional heat pump system because the geothermal, not only are the mechanical parts failing, but the well and the return well is failing as well.
Very understandable. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Jeff? Okay, thank you. And next is our town administrator's report.
I have nothing to contribute tonight.
Thank you. I have no additional comments.
Nothing, sir.
I have nothing.
Nothing.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any comments or anything that wants to be brought before the council from the folks in attendance tonight? All right, do we have any comments or questions from the press?
Move to adjourn.
We stand adjourned.